Let's start with two stories, and you decide which one is more Christmassy. First story. Two young boys are trying out for the part of Joseph in the nativity play. They both really want the part. And when it's assigned, the boy who did not get it, he was given the way less glamorous role of an innkeeper. And he was not happy. So during rehearsals, this innkeeper boy plotted his revenge. And on Christmas Eve, when Joseph and the little girl playing Mary knocked on the door of the inn and said, "Please, sir, we're very tired, and my wife's about to have a baby. Do you have any room in your inn?" The innkeeper unexpectedly threw the door wide open and said, "Sure do, come on in." The congregation gasped at this deviation from the script. But the boy playing Joseph, thinking quickly, turned to Mary and said, "Wait right here." He stepped around the innkeeper. He looked around inside briefly behind the door, came back out and said, "Come on, Mary, no wife of mine's going to stay at a dump like that." And as they walked away from the inn, the storyline was back on track. Story one, the case of the vengeful innkeeper. Story number two, a Texas billionaire had 20 of the sharpest young men in the United States brought to his ranch one day, and he invited them all out to his swimming pool, which was full of alligators and eels and snakes, really nasty. And the rich guy said, "Okay, you guys are the brightest and the best in our country. If any one of you is willing to swim from one end to the other, I will give you the choice of all of my land or all of my money or my daughter's hand in marriage." And no sooner had he said that than there was a splash and a guy started flailing and twisting and screaming and spinning and swimming for his life. Somehow he made it the length of the pool. And as he climbed out, the billionaire said, "Mighty impressive, son, mighty impressive. So, do you want all my land?" Guy shook his head. He said, "Ah, you want all my money?" Guy shook his head. Texas guy said, "Oh, you're smart. You want to marry my daughter because eventually you'll inherit everything that I own." Young man shook his head again. The rich guy said, "You don't want my land or my money or my daughter? I don't get it. What do you want?" The young man said, "I want the guy who pushed me in." So there you go, two stories, the innkeeper and the swimmer. Which of these would you say classifies as the best Christmas-themed story? And while you're thinking about that, let me set the table for today's scripture. This fall, a bunch of people in our congregation have been reading the Bible together. For 4 months, there are four Gospels. We've read a page a day about Jesus since September 1st. Not just so we could say that we did, not just to fulfill a Bible reading quota, not to earn extra points with the star of all of those pages. So why have we been reading a page a day about Jesus for this fall? The best answer came at the very top of the page we read yesterday, where Jesus said in John 17:3, "Now this is eternal life, that they know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom you have sent." We are reading a page a day together so that we can know God and the Christ he sent to earth. Because knowing Jesus is what it takes for us to have the life God intended us to live. And each Sunday this fall, the sermon's been from whatever page we're up to on that particular day. So today, December 18th, we're in John's Gospel, page 18. John 18, near the end of the Gospel, which you might not think is Christmassy. In fact, this week I kind of wondered about it. It's a page, John 18 is about two guys' reactions to Jesus. It's not even about Jesus. It's about these two guys' reactions to Jesus. And as I thought about that, I thought, oh boy. It's not typical December fare for sermon listeners. It's not even really about Jesus. It's about two guys and how they reacted to him. Then I realized, neither is the stuff that we normally talk about in December. Zechariah and Elizabeth giving birth to a baby late in their lives, Joseph and Mary, shepherds, wise men. What we usually talk about in December is people's reactions to Jesus when he arrived. So today, we're going to talk about the same thing, people's reactions to Jesus, except at the end of his earthly journey. And this page contains the very heart of Christmas. I really hope you can see that today. Here's where we pick up the story. Jesus is wildly loved by people. Because of the things that he's done, because of the way he loves people, because of what he teaches, He is wildly loved by people and fiercely hated by the elite for the same reasons. The leaders, religious leaders, want him dead. The people wish that he would become their king. And they're constantly around him. They're constantly surrounding him, asking him to do more. So it's been hard for those who hate him to figure out how to arrest Jesus when there's not a crowd around, which is when Judas, one of Jesus' inner group, leaves the Last Supper in the upper room during Passover and goes out and finds the religious leaders and says, I can take you to him now. It's night, it's dark, he's mostly alone. And they say, deal, we will go with you, but how can we be sure we're going to arrest the right guy if it's dark and there are a lot of guys around? And Judas says, the man I greet with a kiss, that'll be your guy. A kiss. He's going to betray Jesus with a kiss. But even in that, Jesus geniusly gave Judas a chance to rethink his decision. In John chapter 18, the first sentence says, when Jesus had finished praying, he left with his disciples and crossed the Kidron Valley. On the other side, there was a garden, and he and his disciples went into it. Now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place because Jesus had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came to the garden, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and the Pharisees. They were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, who is it you want? Probably that night, Judas had led the mob to the upper room, thinking that Jesus and the guys would still be there. But when he got there, it's empty. But Judas is still okay because he knows where Jesus likes to go to pray. Note, if Jesus didn't want to be caught that night, he could have gone anywhere else. Like when Daniel knelt down near an open window knowing that the prayer police were watching him, Jesus goes to pray where he usually prays. And Judas and the soldiers show up to get him. So we have Judas's gang walking up the trail to where Jesus and his guys are in the garden. And Jesus, we're told, goes out to meet them. Jesus knows what's going on. He knows where it'll all lead, and yet he walked right into it. Like David walked out to meet Goliath, Jesus steps out to confront his arresters. And Jesus asks them who they're looking for. And when they say, Jesus of Nazareth, he says, that's me. At which point, they all fell down. They all fell down. I have no idea why. It just says, they all fell down. Verse 6 says, when Jesus said, I am he, they drew back and fell to the ground. Did Jesus blast them with some God beam out of his eyes or something? Were they floored that Jesus was so bold as to step forward and admit who he was? Did Judas realize what he was doing and suddenly not want to be part and take a step back and stumble over Caiaphas, and then they both fell into Annas, and then they fell into Malchus, and then they fell into all the guards, and they fell, and they all got dominoed? I don't know how, but those there to take Jesus prisoner are, at the moment, on the ground before him. They stand up hastily, brush themselves off, try to regain their composure, try to figure out their next move, but apparently they're having a hard time. So Jesus takes control, and he says, who are you here for? They said, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said, that's me. This time they don't fall down, they go up and they handcuff Peter, Jesus, at which point Peter, realizing what's happened, pulls a sword and swings at the nearest guy to him. He cuts the guy's ear off. Probably Peter was trying to sever the guy's head, but he wasn't a sword fighter, he was a fisherman. He missed and chopped the guy's ear off. Verse 10 says, then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Did you ever stop to wonder why Peter wasn't arrested that night? Probably for a couple reasons. Jesus immediately de-escalated the situation. He said, put away your sword, Peter. We're not doing that. Also, they were really intent on just getting Jesus into the back of the police car. They weren't really caring about anybody else. They just wanted to get Jesus arrested. That was their big goal that night. Also, they couldn't prove an assault occurred since Jesus snapped Malchus's ear back in place. But then Jesus let them arrest him, at which point all of his guys ran scared. And crucifixion eve began. We have a house on our street that has crazy Christmas decorations every year. They have Santa and reindeer and elves in the North Pole on one side of their yard, and they have Joseph and Mary and angels and wise men on the other side. They are not leaving out either side of the Christmas story. I heard about a guy in Kentucky who also splits his front yard decorations down the middle. On one side, he's got the manger and the animals and the baby in the manger and a sign in front of that that says, God's gift to us. On the other side of his yard, he's got a cross. Just two pieces of wood standing there bare, a cross, and the sign in front of it says, our gift to God. Can you put up a cross and Christmas on the same lawn? Is that messed up or is that brilliant? Later on this page, John 18, the governor asked Jesus if Jesus thinks he's king of the Jews. And Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders, but now my kingdom is from another place. Pilate said, you are a king then. Jesus said, you say that I'm king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of the truth listens to me. How about that? Jesus tells Pilate the reason he was born. Jesus tells Pilate the reason for Christmas. Our family has a poster that we put up every year. It says, Jesus is the reason for the season. I always want to change it to say, Jesus is the reason for every season. But that wouldn't be Christmassy, so we don't do that. But the reason there is a Christmas season, according to Jesus, the reason he came to earth, so that he could tell people the truth, so that you could know the truth, so that we could all listen to Jesus. That's why he came. And what I really hope you'll see is how much he wants you to get that idea. Judas here is making the biggest mistake of his life. He is betraying Jesus. After 3 years of being really good friends with an amazing guy, he's betraying him. Betraying Jesus, the one guy who loved Judas more than anybody else had ever loved Judas in his whole life. It's so messed up. And it was all going to go down when Judas kissed Jesus. At that point, it would be too late. Judas had agreed with Jesus' enemies. That's going to be the sign. When I kiss him, that's the one. You'll know that's Jesus when I kiss him. But Jesus had made it so Judas didn't have to. Judas didn't have to identify Jesus for the soldiers. Jesus identified himself twice. Judas, at that point, could have run away with the 11. He didn't have to do it. Have you found that to be the case in your life? Have you ever gotten yourself tricked into the point where you're about to do something that you know is really wrong, and you kind of know that this is going to mess stuff up for the rest of your life if you go ahead with your plan, and then something happens that kind of breaks the spell, that almost shakes you free. Something comes up, and you realize how stupid it would be if you go ahead and do the thing that you're thinking about. Jesus gives us so many chances to do the right thing, and we don't have to, but he really tries to give us a chance, because if someone you love is about to jump off a building, you would try to stop them, right? You have a friend who's thinking about leaving her husband for somebody at work because he really sees her. You have a spouse who's an addict and is hearing the drug of choice call to him, and he's thinking about going out. A sibling is suicidal, convinced that the world would be better if he's not in it. A daughter is pondering leaving home because anywhere else has to be better than here. Maybe you're a Christian, but your world just got shattered, and you're not sure God can ever be trusted again. When you're at the very edge, Jesus will always reach out to you, hoping to help you not fall. He never makes you. You always get to decide. It's your life for real. But he always gives you a chance. Judas had a chance to change his forever. Jesus gave him that chance. But he still went ahead and kissed Jesus and sealed his fate. Yogi Berra used to say, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. The lesson for today is, when you're offered an exit from the evil that you're considering, take it. If Judas had, the name Judas would not have the connotations it does today. And more importantly for Judas would not be where he is today. But there's another guy whose reaction to Jesus is featured on today's page too. A guy by the name of Peter. You might have heard of him. Mom and dad named him Simon. Kind of mouthy. Fished for a living. Had a brother named Andrew. Got married. Had a mother-in-law. Walked on water. Probably not in the eyes of his mother-in-law. Talked a lot. One of the three closest friends Jesus had while he was here. Sometimes Jesus' best student was once given the keys to the kingdom. Eventually preached the first sermon ever to include Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection as the subject. After his sermon, 3,000 people said, yes, please, I'd like to be baptized. First pope, so they say, is often found at heaven's gates in most heavenly jokes. Peter, do you know that cryogenesis always sing the same song when another cryogenesis dies? Cryogenesis, when another cryogenesis dies, sing, freeze a jolly good fellow, freeze a jolly good fellow, freeze a jolly good fellow. We'd say that about Peter too, right? A jolly good fellow, Peter's good, right? If somebody asked you, who from the Gospels would you put with Jesus? Like, who goes with Adam? Adam and Eve. Who goes with Abraham? Abraham and Isaac. David and Goliath. Noah and Joan. Joan of Arc? I don't know. Joan. Who goes with Jesus? Mary and Joseph? You'd probably say Jesus and Mary, right? His mother. Or you might say Jesus and Peter. They're that close. Peter's the guy. But it's weird. On page 18 of John's Gospel, Peter disqualifies himself from all of that. When Judas kissed Jesus and Jesus was arrested in the garden, all of his guys went running. But some of them then followed the mob from a safe distance to see what was going to happen to Jesus. In verse 15, it says, Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus. Because this disciple was known to the high priest, he went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard, but Peter had to wait outside at the door. The other disciple, who was known to the high priest, came back, spoke to the servant girl on duty there, and brought Peter in. She asked Peter, you aren't one of this man's disciples too, are you? Peter replied, I am not. Jesus had been telling Peter in the weeks leading up to this moment that there would come a time of testing, that there would come a time when they would all have to decide how important Jesus was to them, would they stand with him or not? And every time Jesus brought that up, Peter said, dude, I am with you 192%. I am on your side, come what may. Nothing can stop me. And Jesus always said, we'll see, or hope so, or that's what I'm praying for, Peter. But right before this happened, Jesus said, oh, Peter, I love your optimism, but you won't. Jesus said, in fact, tonight, Peter, before the second rooster crowing, you're going to ghost me 3 times. And Peter said, oh, no, 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 Lord, I will certainly not do that. Jesus said, we'll see. Probably all the guys nearby heard that, what Jesus said Peter was going to do, and they all looked at Peter, and Peter looked at them and said, no way, not happening, no. Fast forward, Jesus gets arrested, the soldiers are beating on him, beating hard, the leaders are cheering, taunting, mocking. Peter's watching all that from afar when John sneaks out and says, I can get you closer, and brings Peter through the gate, and a teenage girl who stands there sees Peter walking in and says, you're not actually one of those guys' followers too, are you? And Peter, very nervous about everything that's going down, without thinking, says, no. Denial number one. Sometimes we say things in all sincerity. We really mean it, but when tested, it does not turn out like we plan. Verse 18 says, it was cold, and the servants and the officials stood around a fire they had made to keep warm. Peter also was standing with them, warming himself. It's going to get bad again for Peter. Good lesson here. It is not a good idea to warm yourself around the enemy's fire. Too many things can break bad when you're somewhere you know you should not be. Verse 25 says, meanwhile, Simon Peter was still standing there warming himself. So they asked him, you aren't one of his disciples too, are you? He denied it, saying, I am not. No, I am not. I was a sophomore in high school. I'd had a great summer, went to Mountain View, great Christian camp, decided this year I was going to be the Christian in our high school. I was going to be the guy. I was going to do it. First class, sociology, walked in, almost all seniors sitting there. All the seats are taken except one in the very front, next to the only other sophomore in the class. I sat down next to Judy. Mr. Connolly, the teacher, walked in, looked around, said, very interesting. In this class, we're going to talk about stuff like why the jocks are sitting back there in their own section and why the druggies are sitting over there. That's you guys, right? And they went, yeah. He goes, why the cheerleaders all sit in their own sections except the ones that want to sit with the jocks or the druggies. He said, we're going to talk about why you're all segregated here. But when you go to a good party, you can all mix. He said, we're going to talk about why it's easier to hang together when you're at bars. He said, yeah, bars are interesting places. Somebody said, oh, can we take a field trip? He said, yeah, well, no, but he said, bars are good. Getting drunk is interesting. He said, everyone in here has been drunk at some point in their life, right? We've all been drunk. One football player said, no, not me. Popular girl across the room said, yeah, except when you threw up on me all last night. Mr. Connolly said, is there anyone in this room who hasn't been drunk? And I knew I should raise my hand. I had never tasted alcohol in my life. And I determined this year I was going to really shine a light in my school. I should raise my hand. But I didn't think the people in the room would respond well. And I was a sophomore, and they were seniors. And I wanted them to think well of me. Peter said, no. No, I don't know him. Verse 26, one of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him, didn't I see you with him in the garden? Again, Peter denied it, and at that moment, a rooster began to crow. Peter chickened out, and a chicken outed Peter. So much for 192%, Lord, no matter what. On page 18, Peter is the same as Judas. They both fail utterly at sticking with Jesus. As friends go, they are both the worst. If you've ever had a friend betray you in life, then you know how Jesus felt when Judas kissed him, and you know how Jesus felt when Peter yelled, I don't even know him. If you've ever been abandoned by a friend in an important moment, you know what this is like, how much it hurts, how sad it makes you, how you wish you could hurt the person back. And if you're the one who's done the hurting, you know that it'll never be right again between you. When you hurt somebody like that, it's not going to be good. That's why Judas went out and ended his own life. He knew he'd blown it, totally. And Peter felt the same, but for some reason, Peter decided to hang around. Peter did not end everything that night. Sad as he was, humiliated as he was, hopeless as he was, for some reason, Peter decided to suffer the hurt and mourn through his pain. And I'm guessing it's because Jesus somehow offered Peter the option, like Jesus always offers us options. Maybe through the other guys who encouraged Peter to stay with them after the crucifixion. Maybe it was through his wife's willingness to sit with him, like Job's wife had, and just be sad together. Maybe it was through remembering the amazing things that he had done with Jesus and not wanting to leave those memories. Maybe it was his fear of what was waiting for him after he died. I know a preacher who got involved in porn a lot, ended up having an affair, and was so ashamed he went to the woods with a pistol, intending to kill himself. And once he got there, just to see if he could do it, he put the gun close to his head and he fired. The sound ruptured his eardrum. But at that point, he knew he could pull the trigger. So he put the gun to his head and he said, he thought of his kids, and he thought of his wife, and he thought of his church. But in the end, it was the fear of going to hell that actually prevented him from doing it. He did not want to face God with that act as the last thing he ever did on earth. Maybe that was Peter. We don't know why, but for some reason, after Peter's epic fail, he still chose to remain. And because he did, Peter got the surprise of his life. When Jesus came back to life a couple days later, Jesus sought Peter out first. Out of all the guys, Jesus appeared first to Peter, not to yell at him, not to condemn him, not to punish him, to forgive him, to invite him back in, to reconcile, to restart their friendship. Are you kidding me? Who does that? Jesus. And people who follow Jesus Peter Miller was a beloved preacher in Pennsylvania during the Revolutionary War. He was much loved, except by one man. Peter Miller had a neighbor who hated him and verbally abused him regularly. Mr. Miller tried to befriend this neighbor, tried to help him, tried to win him over, but no dice. The man hated him and was mean about it. He also hated Peter Miller's church and Peter Miller's country. It turned out this guy was a traitor. He was convicted of treason and sentenced to die. When Peter Miller heard that the man was about to be executed, he went to see George Washington to ask for a stay of execution. George Washington said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I cannot grant your request for your friend." And Miller said, "Friend, that man is the worst enemy I have in the world." And George Washington was surprised. He said, "You walk 60 miles to save the life of an enemy? That puts things in a different light. I will grant him a pardon for your sake." And after George Washington signed the pardon, Peter Miller took it and he walked 15 miles to the site of the execution. And as he arrived, his enemy was being carried to the scaffold to be hung. And he saw Peter Miller coming up and he said, "There's old Peter Miller, walked all this way to have his revenge gratified by seeing me hung today." Peter Miller pushed through the crowd and handed the condemned man his pardon that saved his life. And in the end, that's what Jesus did for Simon Peter. He walked up to him and handed Peter a pardon. He said, "Not guilty. I will not hold it against you. You are free." Not that Simon Peter deserved that. He most certainly did not deserve that. But that's the kind of guy Jesus is. And that's the kind of stuff Jesus does. And that, folks, is how Simon Peter became the kind of man he became. Not by sheer willpower, not by trying really hard, not by deciding he needed to be. Peter became Peter, the amazing, standing up to anybody, speaking out to everybody, leader of thousands, eventually willing to be martyred rather than deny that Jesus was great. He became that guy only because Jesus offered to still be his friend. Which no matter what you have done, no matter where you have gone, no matter who you've been, he offers to you too. Jesus wants to be your friend. And when you realize that, when it hits you in your heart, when you finally see it, when you finally get it, that is the beginning of living eternal life. A life that's so rich and so full, it'll last forever. It's a life that bubbles up and spills out. It changes you from the inside. He remakes you by his friendship. We do not get good by trying really hard. There is no get good quick gimmick that I can give you. So many people try so many things to make their lives better. Did you hear about the guy who is suing Smart Water because he drank it and did not get smart? And hearing that, someone announced a lawsuit against Thin Mints. How about the lady who had Panera Bread on her head? She had Panera Bread on her head. And she said, "I've lost some weight by wearing bread on my head. It's a new low-fat diet I'm trying. It's a low-fat diet." I'll explain it later. When you realize, when you get that Jesus knows you the best and he still loves you the most. That's the reason he came, so that you could get that idea into you for good, that it would change you. So which story is the most Christmassy, the innkeeper or the alligator swimmer? I'm going with the swimmer. Swimming, somebody said, swimming is such an unusual activity. Sometimes you do it for fun, sometimes you do it to save your life. But at the heart of Christmas, the reason for the season turns out we are the ones who pushed him in. But Jesus willingly made his way through dangerous waters, and all he wanted afterwards was for us to get him. And when you do, I don't know if you ever have, when you do, it changes everything. I love going to concerts of people I know. I love going to concerts. I went to a Victor Band concert yesterday to hear Mark play. Last weekend, I went to a concert to hear Jay sing. Last weekend, I went to hear Aaron perform also. I've been to Cody's concerts. And this week, I'm going to get to hear Lucas and Ellie sing. Once, I went to a third grade concert with 120 kids up front. 120 third grade kids at a concert is great fun. Not always great music, but it's great fun. They sing with gusto. They wander around. They wave to people. They say I have to go to the bathroom in the middle of a song. It's fun to watch third grade concerts. Dancing instruments, choreography at this one. They had terrific energy. It was a great show. But on this one song, they were all going crazy. Everyone was singing. The song was going. It was as fast as they could all sing. And they had a group of five boys standing in the front singing a special part of the song. But the boys weren't going as fast as everybody else. So everybody else got to the end of the song, and the music stopped, and all the kids stopped singing, but the five boys were still going because they weren't to the end of their part. Apparently, they still had several lines more to sing. But when everybody stopped, four of the five boys realized what was happening, and they also stopped mid-word and started sheepishly looking around. But the last boy, one third grader, kept right on going, undeterred, vigorously singing his part all by himself, with no music and no fellow singers. He just kept singing, and he finished his part of the song by himself. And when he was done, the whole room, everybody, was just looking at him. And he went like this. And he walked back to his place on the riser to thunderous applause. And that's the kind of life that you can live when you actually internalize Jesus' desire to be your friend. Peter was so scared of other people that he publicly denied Jesus three times. He said, no, I don't know him. No, I don't know him. No, I effing don't know him. Stop asking me that. And then Jesus died, and he thought, wow, I have to live with that for the rest of my life. But Jesus came back to life and offered Peter a chance to be friends again, better than before. And Peter was transformed by his friendship with Jesus. We can be too. I have been. I did not raise my hand that day. And I am now spending my life trying to tell people that Jesus is the best and only way to live life. Trying more than ever, and with God's help, we'll do even better this year. Peter was transformed by his friendship with Jesus. We can be too. You can be too. God as a baby in a manger. Great. God as a friend in you who makes you different. Even greater. And if you'll ask him to, starting today, he will do it. Merry Christmas. Let's pray.